What if you found yourself under a comet that changes the reality of your neighborhood? Or at a cruise ship that's stuck in an infinite repeating loop? Or what if you stop at a remote gas station with a rundown carnival next to it and a mysterious entity who never shows his face? Hello everyone, and welcome to another exploration of impossible places in cosmic horror. My last video on this topic did quite well, so I watched and read some more stuff in this subgenre. All of which were suggestions from the last video's comments section. Before we begin, just know that I will be spoiling everything I talk about, and let's get started. In the movie Coherence, we see a group of friends at a dinner party. During one of the conversation topics, we learn that a comet is passing over Earth. One of them says that the last time this happened in the 1920s, there was a bunch of weird stuff happening in Finland. People got lost and found in the wrong house, and things like that. One woman called the police and said that the man in her house wasn't her husband, even though he looked just like him. As the night continues, strange things start happening. Cell phones suddenly crack, the power goes out across the neighborhood, and the only house still lit is a few blocks away. Two of them decide to check it out. When they return, they bring back a box containing photos of everyone at the dinner party, some taken that very night. And each photo is marked with a number. Nobody remembers the photos being taken. This is the first clear sign that something is very wrong here. Soon they realize they're not alone. There are other versions of themselves, identical groups, and other versions of this night. And these realities are bleeding into each other. The comet's presence seems to have fractured reality itself. Every time someone leaves the house and walks into the darkness, they might re-enter a different version of their own home. The houses look the same, the people look the same, but subtle differences give things away. Different glow stick colors, strange conversations, or slight changes in behavior. So they learn that once they exit the house and go through this dark area, they essentially enter a roulette wheel of reality, and they can end up in a random one each time. And I like how they accept this fact. They don't spend the whole movie denying it, even though it sounds impossible. They explain this with Schrödinger's cat and quantum decoherence, how because of this comet, reality is split into infinite branches and they all overlap each other at this point in space. Later, they themselves create one of those boxes. So some versions are more advanced than others, and some have different ideas. Also, some groups have different approaches. Some want to kill the others, some want to ignore them, and some want to do a bunch of ketamine. One of the characters starts to think that there's a better version of her life in another timeline, one where she's happier or where her relationship turned out differently. So she goes shopping for a new version of her friends. When she finds a version of that night that seems ideal, she knocks out her other self and tries to take her place. But as you can imagine, this doesn't turn out as planned. Very cool movie, and it managed to keep me intrigued throughout despite barely leaving one location. I was originally going to throw this on while playing Dredge, but I had to turn the game off and give this movie my full attention. Also, the dialogue felt supernatural, which helped to reel me in, and the mystery is built really well, and there's a lot of moments where it clicks, like with the box. And at first, when I saw the box, I thought they were going to set up the bootstrap paradox, which is when something exists without a clear origin, because it loops through time or realities. Like, an object is passed from one version of someone to another, and no one ever actually created it. It just keeps existing because it always did. So this is, in a sense, an impossible object. Anyway, this did not turn out to be the case, although I think it would have been a very cool idea to explore. I learned about this in the TV show Dark, which is my favorite show of all time. And speaking of Dark, it is another place that can't exist, but that would need its own full video to explore. Also, the comet approaching instantly reminded me of Hellstar Remina, because of the way its presence changes reality. In Remina, the star devours entire planets as it approaches. In Coherence, the comet doesn't eat the Earth, but it breaks its reality and splits it apart into countless overlapping versions. In the movie Triangle, the place that shouldn't exist is a cruise ship. A woman named Jess is getting ready to go on a sailing trip with a group of people. But right away, something feels off, not just with her, but the way things are shot. Like she's already been through something, or like she's not entirely present in the moment. They set sail on a boat, and then suddenly, they go from 7 knots of wind to zero. They try to call for help, but there's a woman asking for help as well on the radio. Then a storm comes out of nowhere and hits them hard, and the boat capsizes. The survivors cling onto the wreckage, and one person doesn't survive. And then out of nowhere, this random huge cruise ship appears, quite conveniently, maybe too conveniently. But they don't really have a choice, so they climb aboard. The ship is empty, just long metal hallways, tables set for dinner, and old-fashioned decor like it hasn't been updated in decades. At first, this plays like a typical abandoned place horror, which is what I thought it would end up being, but it was actually a lot more. Then things start to get weird. There's blood in places where no one's injured yet. There are signs that somebody is following them, or maybe already ahead of them. And then they find a message written in Jess's own handwriting. At a certain point, Jess figures it out. The cruise ship is stuck in a loop where events repeat, but not exactly the same way. People die, come back, and die again. Sometimes the same way, sometimes slightly different. Her previous self tells her that the only way to fix the loop is to kill everybody else. So she does that. The ship resets every time it picks up the passengers, but Jess doesn't forget. Kind of. She tries to break the cycle, but the ship won't let her. And I've seen theories that this could be her purgatory or something like that. But apparently the director didn't provide any extra context, so it could just be a random cosmic machine that just keeps going, with no origin point and no clear reason. Eventually she makes it off the ship, or at least it seems like she does. But something's still wrong. The world and time feel off. She's back in familiar places, but they don't feel real anymore. Like the outside is part of the trap too. And in the very end, the loop starts over. And you would think she remembers what happened so she can make it better the next time. But she's as clueless as she was the last run. So I think what's happening here is that this is some cruel infinity cosmic machine that these people got trapped in to eternally be killed by Jess, who thinks she's doing the right thing, and ultimately always failing in this impossible location. So thanks to the great suggestions on my last video of this topic, I became aware of the writer Thomas Ligotti, and after reading the story Gas Station Carnivals by him, I instantly became a fan. The story begins with the narrator sitting down in a place called the Crimson Cabaret. He's smoking cigarettes and drinking mint tea to help with his upset stomach. His friend Quisser comes and sits down next to him, and we learn that Quisser offended the Crimson Woman, who is the owner of the Crimson Cabaret, so Quisser came here to apologize to her. Quisser says that the cabaret looks stranger than usual, but the narrator doesn't think so. Then Quisser asks him if he remembers gas station carnivals, but he asks in a way where they're a common thing, and everybody could have known about them. The narrator says he doesn't know what this is, and Quisser is a little surprised, because everyone he asks seems to not know what they are, even though they're as clear as day to him. Quisser says that when he was little and his family would go on road trips, they would often stop at these carnivals next to run-down gas stations, and if you fill up gas, you gain entry to the carnival. There was usually a tall, arched entranceway with colored light bulbs that provided an eerie contrast to the vast and barren landscape surrounding it. Especially around sunset, which was usually, or possibly always, when Quisser and his parents found themselves in one of these remote locales. The colorful illumination of carnival entranceway created an effect that was both festive and sinister. The rides here would be smaller than at regular carnivals and often broken, because when they broke, the maintenance would be too high to repair them, so they were just left abandoned. Quisser himself never rode anything because of this reason, but once he sat on a wooden horse in a merry-go-round. So this gas station carnival sounds like a bizarre collection of memories of a bizarre concept, which I love to see in stories. So the rides at these carnivals would always be broken, but there was one attraction that was always open, the sideshow. There would be only a single sideshow attraction at a given site, and outwardly they each presented the same image to the carnival's patrons. a small tent of torn and filthy canvas. At some point along the perimeter of the tent, there would be a loose flap of material through which Quisser and his parents, though sometimes only Quisser himself, would gain entrance to the sideshow. Inside the tent, there were a few wooden benches that had sunk a little bit into the hard dirt beneath them, and some distance away, a small stage area that was raised perhaps just a foot or so above the ground level. So the characters at these sideshows would be gas station workers dressed up in carnival attire and giving a simple show. There was various versions. One of them was the human spider, where the gas station worker would be dressed like a spider and he would simply go back and forth across the stage, and that would be the whole show. Then there was the hypnotist, who was simply clothed in a long, loose overcoat and wore a plastic mask, which was a plain, very pale replica of a human face, with the exception that instead of eyes, or eye holes, there were two large discs with spiral designs painted upon them. And the hypnotist would just chaotically move his body, looking at the audience. Some other attractions would include the dancing puppet, the worm, the hunchback, and Dr. Fingers. These aren't given in detail, but we can imagine what they do given the other two. So two things about these shows. They would start after Quisser and his family would enter the tent, and Quisser and his family would always be the only people watching the show. There was never any other people at the gas station carnival. So the rule where the show only starts after Quisser and his family enter doesn't apply to the showman, who was always there before Quisser and his family would enter the tent, like he knew they would come or he was just always there. And this showman character sounds quite scary. Standing with his back to the audience and wearing an old top hat and a long cape that touched the dirty floor of the small stage on which he stood. Sticking out from beneath the top hat were the dense and lengthy shocks of the showman's stiff red hair, Quisser said, which looked like some kind of sickening vermin's nest. There were also the fingers of the showman which grasped the edges of his long cape. These fingers appeared to Quisser to be somehow deformed, curling together into little claws, and were a pale greenish color. So the point of the showman is that his back was always turned to them, but he would move a little bit with his head and fingers to give you the idea that at any moment he can turn around and jump scare you. That was his thing. So I read a lot of these horror stories, and at this point they're not really scary anymore, but after reading this one and hearing about the showman, it did give me a little uneasy feeling, and I even got nightmares about it after, so it means it was really good. So the narrator stops Quisser and tells him how bizarre this concept of gas station carnivals are, and then he correctly guesses that Quisser has been seeing the showman outside of the carnival. In fact, he's seeing him on the stage of the Crimson Cabaret right now. The whole time Quisser was talking about the carnivals, he was looking not at the narrator, but at the stage in the cabaret. And the narrator also correctly guesses that Quisser thinks that when the showman turns around fully, some catastrophic demise will ensue. The narrator explains to Quisser that this must be a false memory, because gas station carnivals never existed, and that this false memory is a form of art magic that the Crimson Woman cast upon Quisser as payback for him offending her. So this is when Quisser goes to the bathroom, and the waitress comes and the narrator asks her to bring another glass of wine for Quisser. This is when she says that there is no glass of wine there. In fact, who is Quisser? He was never here. The narrator was by himself the whole night. This means that the whole idea of gas station carnivals came from the narrator's mind, not Quisser's. So the narrator goes to find Quisser, who does confirm that he was not there last night. And Quisser also says that it was the narrator who offended the Crimson Woman, not Quisser. So after learning this, the narrator goes to apologize to her, but she doesn't even know who he is. She says that she barely knows him and that he definitely didn't offend her. So the narrator says that the three of them are tied in this knot of delusion cast by who knows what and for who knows what reason they're being punished. But honestly, it's really only the narrator who's confused. Quisser and the Crimson Woman seem kind of normal. Only the narrator is making up stories in his mind and talking to himself in the cabaret. So I'm not sure if they're all deluded or just him. So I read this story, and the day after, I had to go on a long drive. and just as the sun was setting, I came across this gas station. And behind it was a tent. And I was looking at this and thought it was kind of weird. Then my friend, who listened to the story with me, said that, oh look, it's a gas station carnival. And I could not believe this. It was just a crazy coincidence after I've been thinking about gas station carnivals for 2 whole days. And this combination of words, gas station carnivals, does evoke some vague familiarity in the brain, which is why I decided to read it. This combination of words seems very familiar, but scary and foreign at the same time. Carnivals always had the capacity to be spooky, and pairing them with gas stations seems like the perfect combination to evoke that spookiness out of them. Not only do I love the concept of gas station carnivals, but the second half of the story, where the safe part, which was them two in the cabaret, falls apart completely, was also really great. I knew some twist would come, but I wasn't expecting that the safe part would fall apart so much and we would be left with nothing concrete at the end. So after loving this story so much, I checked out another of Ligotti's works called The Red Tower, which also features an impossible place. The Red Tower is a story about a red brick building, which is actually a factory set in a barren landscape. There are no roads to this factory, all access is subterranean. The factory had long been in ruins, its innumerable bricks worn and crumbling, its many windows shattered. Each of the 3 enormous stories that stood above the ground level was vacant of all but dust and silence. The machinery, which had densely occupied the 3 floors of the factory, as well as considerable space beneath it, is said to have evaporated. So one day, all the machinery from the factory disappeared and only left shadows where it used to be. And this disappearance of items turns out to be something the factory was prone to do, as a result of its contrast against the gray, dull landscape. The narrator even thinks that the factory wasn't always red, but developed this red color to distinct itself from the gray landscape. In fact, he thinks that the factory wasn't even always fully there. It started as a translucent outline, then formed into a real structure. But let's get to the point. What does the factory actually produce? So, the narrator says it underwent several evolutions of products. So in the first stage, the factory produced random items, which would sometimes resemble human faces or fingers, but most of the time they wouldn't resemble anything at all. The second stage got a little better. It would make lockets, which when you opened them, there would be a black abyss inside them. It would also make lifelike replicas of organs that had diseases in them and were warm to the touch. Some of these would even scream if you picked them up. There was also one item that was a piece of cement that would leave a green, greasy stain on any surface it was placed on. So some pretty weird things popping out of this factory so far, but it will only get weirder. The third level would make music boxes that made gurgling sounds when you opened them, and also pocket watches with reptilian pink tongues instead of the hands. There were also intricate carpets that would have patterns that you would see in a fever dream, the narrator says. So this is only my second story from Ligotti, and I don't know if he does this all the time, but in these 2, I really like when he lists and describes these bizarre things in great detail. It really draws me into the story, like when he was describing all the shows that would happen in the carnivals, or these intricate designs that the factory would make. The narrator says how these items would be shipped to random locations, and this idea kind of scared him, how some of them would never be found by humans, and he doesn't know what purpose they were shipped to remote areas of the world. I actually had this cool idea that maybe this factory makes items that are in bootstrap paradox, so this impossible factory makes these impossible items that happen in all these paradoxes. This is never hinted at or said in the story, I just thought it would be a cool idea because I was talking earlier about bootstrap paradoxes. So this factory is like an impossible answer to an impossible question. So the last evolution of the factory is even creepier. This stuff happened on a separate floor with fluorescent green walls and graves on the floor. But instead of being home to the dead, these graves would give birth to hyperorganisms, which were little deformed creatures, which scintillated with an obscene degree of vital impulses also, and at the same time, had degeneracy and death written deeply upon them. In accord with a tradition of dumbstruck insanity, It seems the less said about these offspring of the birthing graves or any similar creations, the better. The narrator has no idea what these organisms were or for what purpose they were created. In fact, he says how he often pictures what frantically clawing efforts these creatures probably made to deliver themselves from that confining environment which their malformed or non-existent brains could not begin to understand. So after the factory started making these organisms is when the machinery evaporated. Because this was such a wrong thing to do, they had to shut it down. So we come to find that the narrator has never seen or been to the factory. In fact, nobody ever has, yet everyone knows about it. So this Red Tower factory is quite the impossible place. It makes impossible things, and nobody has ever really seen it or been to it. Yet everybody knows about it, somehow. And this story also reminded me of AI, how the factory learned to make better things, but they were really just wrong, especially towards the end with the weird organisms. There were things that shouldn't really exist.